This episode is brought to you by Roster Up Media, your home for tangible insights on the NFL and fantasy football. Head to rosterupmedia.com for more. If you love football, you'll love Roster Up. What is up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Jet Up Podcast, part of the Roster Up Media Podcast Network. I'm your host, James McWilliams, and I'm excited to be bringing you guys another episode of the Jet Up Podcast. It is an exciting time of year for the New York Jets. We are 7-4. We are in December. Today's December 1st as I record this, and we are playing meaningful football games. It's actually making me a little bit nervous. It has been a long time since this has been the case, and I'm starting to feel it. Starting to feel like, oh no, like, you know, that doubt, that fear that we could lose and not make the playoffs or make the playoffs and have heartbreak. But you know what? I would take that any year over what we have had the last decade, where there's just been a whole lot of nothing. So this is exciting. I'm ready for the heartbreak. You know, it's worth it. It's worth it, folks. The lows are worth the highs, and that's why we're here. So let's get into it. But before we do, remember to go and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you guys are listening, Google Podcasts. And if you're watching with us on YouTube, appreciate you being here with us at the Roster Up Media YouTube channel. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button if you're with us, and you'll get all our latest episodes. So without further ado, let's jump in. The Jets are a different team right now. They are not just a defense and a run game anymore. They have a passing attack. So we're going to talk all about it. It was a big win on Sunday against the Bears. And we really just saw a totally different approach. And, you know, that's what happens when you have confidence in who's under center. So Mike White obviously starts this game. I'm calling this the Mike White rain game, because it was raining and pouring most of this game, and yet Mike White was throwing just perfect spiral, beautiful passes to his receivers, threading the needle, tight windows, making plays, just looked like a veteran. And there's a lot of people out there that are saying, oh, the Bears defense stink, the Bears are nobody. But at the same time, you know, this is a guy who hasn't started a football game in over a year, and has just sat there as QB3 for most of this season. So it's not even getting many reps in practice, and comes out there and just tears it up. And his accuracy, you know, his decision-making, his pocket presence, it is like he has been doing this all year long. So for me, this was the game MVP, Mike White, clear as day. The Jets looked like they had a completely different identity out there with Mike White out there under center. He went 22 for 28. For 315 yards and 3 touchdowns. And there was a graphic during the game that said, basically, when it was showing his stats, it was like the best stats of a Jets quarterback since Mike White, or since himself, I think it said. So basically, Mike White is setting his own standard as to how a quarterback should play for the New York Jets. And I know we got really excited about Mike White last year, and there was a lot of hype around him, and there was even doubt among fan base of whether Zach was the guy then. And people were saying, maybe Mike White's the guy. Maybe Mike White could be our franchise quarterback. And even Robert Saleh last year, when Mike White had that win against the Bengals, was like, could you imagine if we had our franchise quarterback who we got in the fifth round and all this stuff? And even he was starting to buy into that hype of Mike White. And then Mike White had a couple brutal games. Well, he looked good in one and got hurt. And then he had a brutal game against the Bills where he threw 4 picks. And people were kind of, oh, he just got lucky against the Bengals or whatever it was. But I don't think that's the case. I think LaFleur came out today and said Mike White against the Bills that time just had some of his timing off with his receivers, with his release timing on the routes. And he says they've corrected it. So I'm going to trust the guy for now. But he certainly looked like it against the Bears. The way he was moving, his timing with these receivers who he has not been playing a lot of football with this year, was just impeccable. He was just on the money. His accuracy was nearly 80% for the day, which, you know, is incredible by any standard. Zach Wilson's accuracy this season has been mid 50 percentile. It's been abysmal. You know, last in the league in completion percentage, whereas Mike White was the best in the league this past Sunday. So you can't knock that. You can't just throw it all out there and say, this is just because he played a bad defense. That is not a fair assessment. He still went out there and dominated a bad defense. He didn't just hang around, didn't just make a couple plays here and there, show flashes, as we love to talk about with Zach. He went out there and played a consistent game from start to finish. And there was a point in the game where people were like, well, maybe they should just sit him on the bench and let Flacco go out there and finish the game, because, you know, we were like, maybe we need to protect Mike White at this point, because this guy looks like he could be, a potential future piece for us. Am I sold on him being the future of this franchise? I am definitely not at this point. But does he look like he's the best option for us right now? I would say absolutely. He's going out there and he's making plays and he's igniting an offense, resurrecting an offense that was just the run, and is adding the passing element to it. He won FedEx Air Player of the Week. He had zero picks in the game, and we suddenly had a passing attack. Go figure. And then another thing that opened up with Mike White completing passes on a consistent basis was the run game. You know, our running backs suddenly had holes to run through. Suddenly we're getting big chunk plays and making plays in space. So that's what happens when you have a pass game. This is a lot of the concern I had the last couple of weeks when Zach was at quarterback. Everybody's like, well, he's not having any running back help. And it's because they were stacking the box on these running backs saying, Zach Wilson, beat us with your arm. And he could not. So they were like, why are we going to go and guard the pass when Zach Wilson can't beat us with the pass? We're just going to go after these running backs. And that's what they did, and held the Jets to some pretty horrible running stats the last couple of weeks. But this week, suddenly, the run game's open to us. Not a coincidence. When you pass well, you run well. So that's what happened in this game. We saw guys like Bam Knight, who came up from the practice squad, having a great game. Ty Johnson had a massive beast mode, angry run touchdown, where he stiff-armed and broke tackles and basically just looked like a man amongst boys as he ran for a long touchdown in the game. So, you know, clearly it makes a difference when your quarterback is playing well, how your run game is affected. And we saw guys like Garrett Wilson come to life again and be excited. He caught two touchdown passes. One of them was for sure going to be a touchdown. The other one was partially due to a safety falling down, and getting injured on the play. I think he still would have had a big chunk catch on that play. Whether he would have actually got to the end zone, probably not, because the safety who was supposed to stop him was literally just laying on the ground in pain. So at the same time, what happened is what happened. You know, he scored the touchdown. So he had two touchdowns in this game. Massive day for him. And the craziest thing for me at the end of this was recognizing when I read this, I could not believe it, because it didn't seem real to me. But Garrett Wilson caught his first touchdown pass since week two in this game, when Joe Flacco was at quarterback. That means that Zach Wilson has never thrown a touchdown to Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson is an elite football player, and he's somebody who's going to be a wide receiver one for the Jets for a long time. And he has not had a touchdown since Joe Flacco was at quarterback. That's not a coincidence. It's clear that Zach just really, really struggled to get him the ball, even though Garrett Wilson was wide open all the time. So great to see him get back involved in the offense. And then you see guys like Elijah Moore just resurrecting out of nowhere. All of a sudden, he's good again. All of a sudden. Not a coincidence. Had one TD and another big catch where he looked like the old Elijah Moore. And I think he's just been waiting. Just been waiting for that opportunity. Mike White finally provides that opportunity, gets him the ball. It's amazing how a QB change can make a good player go from completely irrelevant to dangerous. So that was exciting to see. Really cool to see Moore getting back into the offense. Like I said on previous podcasts, it's not just about satisfying his happiness or making him feel involved. It's because he is a threat when he gets the ball. So we have to make sure we keep involving both him and Garrett Wilson in that passing attack. Corey Davis returned, made a big first down catch at one point, and just feels like we've got the momentum back in this passing offense. So that was really exciting. And then another crazy stat, which I tweeted out, but just it's hard to believe. Mike White is one touchdown away from tying Zach Wilson's season total. Mike White has played one game. Zach played seven games this year. And Mike White is one touchdown away from tying Zach Wilson's touchdowns for the year. Mind-blowing stuff, folks. The locker room, to me, at this point, what you're seeing is they are behind White, not Wilson. They are showing how much they appreciate White's grit and his just his team approach, where the guys rally behind this type of guy. That's the kind of guy you want leading your team, not a guy that is thinking about himself. So I think Zach Wilson's going to learn a lot in this process. He's going to learn what he can and can't say. He's immature at this point. He's learning still how to be a leader of a franchise. Whether he'll ever get that opportunity again, I don't know. But right now, he needs to learn how to do that. Sometimes sitting and watching is the best way to do that. You know, I saw something where Matt Hasselbeck was talking about that, how he kind of had that mentality that Zach has, where you've got like this, you know, this great pedigree and everybody is expecting much of you. And then you're just immature because you think too much of yourself and ends up affecting your game. You think, you know, you're the best thing since sliced bread. You finally get benched. Somebody who actually is a good leader gets out there, shows you how it's done correctly, takes criticism well, learns how to play better from learning from those around him, not just trusting himself. And Matt Hasselbeck basically said he learned how to be a leader by sitting and watching, and it turned him into a great quarterback who had a good career. So that's the best case scenario for Zach Wilson. Right now, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen with him, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But ultimately, exciting to see Mike White galvanize the offense. Opens up so many different things for Mike LaFleur, especially as we get into this point in the season where we need to have a passing attack that opens up our run game, especially as it gets colder. All right, so this is kind of, you know, the questions Rob Saleh is getting now as he goes into these press conferences, but, you know, should he start Zach at some point if he improves his fundamentals? And right now he is saying yes. He's saying basically like, you know, we want to get Zach back out there at some point, right? I'm saying no. And I have made that clear on this podcast. I was very, very patient with Zach this year. Did not really criticize him much until the last show. And I'm saying, look, until Mike White plays worse than Zach was at the time he was benched, Mike White needs to stay in there. We cannot risk putting a guy out there who's going to hurt the momentum of a team that is playing well right now, as well as it affects the locker room. You're saying to your guys, I don't care about you guys as much as I care about my high draft pick. And I think that can really hurt a locker room, especially one that is looking to make the playoffs now. So I think we need to do whatever it takes to make the playoffs. We can worry about who's our QB in 2023 in the offseason. Not really that important right now. Right now, we're in the middle of a season. I don't care what all these other analysts are saying about how this could hurt Zach's future and his momentum and his ability to grow. You know, I don't care, because right now we're in the middle of a season and we need to win. You know, you've seen this happen in years where you have a guy who you think is your guy, gets hurt or something in the middle of the season. They put in the backup and he dominates. And those teams leave that guy in until he can't play well anymore. Because you know what? You have to ride the hot hand and play the momentum, especially at this point in the year. If Mike White, something happens, he plays horrible multiple games in a row, then I think you start having that conversation again. But right now, you ride the hot hand. You have to make the playoffs. So Rob Saleh can say whatever he wants to the media about Zach being the future, but he will be destroyed as a coach, as a leader in that locker room, if he goes back to Zach with Mike White still balling out. So I think it's all posturing. I think he's just trying to, you know, not create a controversy and still support guys and not degrade anybody. But right now, I think we just have to recognize, you know, Mike White is the guy right now. So I tweeted this out, but, you know, this is how I feel right now. I feel like Joe Douglas drafted a bust. I'm just going to come out and say it. I think he drafted a bust in Zach Wilson, but he also fixed the rest of the roster. One miss, countless hits. So I say he's still a good GM. I think there's really no one out there that's calling for his head right now, and his quarterback, his chosen quarterback, is benched, and no one's calling for Joe Douglas's head. So that should tell you that most people think Joe Douglas has still done a good job. And he's missed on the position that is the hardest position to hit on in the NFL. So I think he's still done a good job. He's found lots of depth on this team this year. You know, you have all these O linemen shuffling in and out. and we're still getting competent O-line play. You have guys like Bam Knight who've come up from the practice squad and just look excellent out there. I mean, he had 14 carries for 69 yards, 4.9 average. I mean, come on. This is this guy's first game action. He's an undrafted rookie. So there's players like that this year that, you know, you go, this guy just crushed the offseason. So you have to give it to Joe Douglas. You cannot just focus on the one player he missed on. Other people are saying, oh, Becton's a bust too. Becton's not a bust in terms of talent, in terms of skill, in terms of production when he plays. He's some are considering him a bust, but that's just because he's been hurt. So I am still holding out hope that Becton will turn it around, will stay healthy, because when he's on the field, he's dominant. But right now, he's not been able to stay on the field. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. So I think he's probably got one more season to prove he can get out there, and then he's probably going to be gone if he can't. But he's not a bust as far as talent goes. So for me, it's one bust, one big bust, and that's Zach Wilson. But I think it's not going to overshadow all the good Joe Douglas has done. Next, I want to just talk about outliers. So when we talk about, you know, players like Zach and guys that struggle earlier in their career, you have people that just point and go, well, this guy did that too, and then he turned into this. And I just think we need to be careful to stop using outliers as like the norm. Outliers are not the norm. That's why they're called outliers. So, you know, we've been using outliers a lot to justify bad quarterback play. It's often just done because people don't want to believe their guy is not bad. Like people will say, oh, Josh Allen turned it around in year two or year three, and now look at him. And Geno Smith with this late career resurgence. And, you know, Geno Smith's been in the league for like 10 years. I mean, people are not usually as patient as they are, as they've been with Geno Smith. And you know what? They really haven't been. He's been on multiple teams, I think four different teams at this point. So it's not like he's just sitting on a team. And they're like, let's just be patient. Let's just be patient. He's good. He's got the talent. He's got the. If Zach turns into a great player, it's probably not going to be with the Jets. That's all I'm going to say is, you know, the amount of time it will take for him, in my opinion, to turn into a late career resurgence, it doesn't usually happen on your first team. I could be wrong, but it's not the norm that a player starts out so poorly and just suddenly turns it around, especially in the areas that Zach's struggling with, like completion percentage, which is an accuracy issue. Accuracy is one of the hardest things to correct. Something that people claimed he did not have issues with at BYU, but at BYU, he was throwing to guys that had 8 to 10 yards of separation and had all the time in the world to throw. It's a different world in the NFL. And it looks like it might be too much for him. So I just want to say, don't use outliers to prove out bad quarterback play or to justify it. And my final thoughts in this segment are the time is over for the season's goal to be evaluating a QB. The Jets are a playoff caliber roster that is ready to win. The times have changed. The goal will too. That's the end of segment one. All right, segment two. So we got a big, big game this week. The Jets play the Vikings. The Vikings are 9-2. The Jets are 7-4. Vikings are 3-point favorites in this one. And the Jets are on the road. So it's basically even. Vegas is basically saying, this is a toss-up. This will go to either team. And I think a big reason for that is the Vikings have been in a lot of tight games this year against teams that are not necessarily dominant. And they've been crushed by certain teams that are very good. So I think a lot of fans are kind of counting this as the Jet fans are counting this as a win. I think, you know, I love that confidence. I appreciate that. The Jets are a good football team, but this one's not going to be easy. You know, the Vikings are not necessarily a dominant 9-2 team, but they're 9-2 for a reason. They found ways to win late in games. So they're down the stretch in these games, and they find a way to pull it out in the end. And that is the sign of a mature and well-coached roster, that they win late in games and hold on to leads that are not blowout games, where it's a close game and they can hold on. They still have some crazy elite weapons. So when you look at their most obvious, Justin Jefferson, He may very well be the best wide receiver in the NFL, period. He is doing things that nobody does. He broke Randy Moss's record for most yards in his first, I think, three seasons. I have him in fantasy football, and it's been just a joy to have Justin Jefferson. But I think, you know, ultimately, this is going to be a huge test for the defense to cover him. Don't assume that Sauce is just going to lock him up 100% of the time. I anticipate it being a heated matchup where both players are going to win at different times in the game. But do not be shocked if Justin Jefferson makes some big chunk plays in this one and even scores. You know, he does it so frequently, so often. He's already has 1,200 yards receiving on the year. It's just phenomenal. So, you know, he's just a totally different level of talent than what the Jets have seen this year. And they've seen some good receivers, but Jefferson is another level. However, the Jets have a good defense. They have a great defense. And I believe they will ultimately hold up and win the day in terms of that battle between them and the Vikings offense. It's going to be tough. I think Sauce, Reed, some of these guys, it's going to be really hard. But I think the Jets pass rush is going to be basically the difference maker in terms of whether Jefferson has the time to get open. Then you have guys like Dalvin Cook, who is an elite running back. It's just going to be tough. It's going to be a hard game. You know, I think the Jets defense is up to the challenge. And ultimately, I'm predicting that they will come out on top on the defensive side of the ball. But it's not going to be easy. Definitely not going to be easy. So I do anticipate the Vikings offense will get the best of us at certain times. So don't be totally shocked if that happens. It doesn't mean Sauce is bad if he gives up a few big plays. He's also still a rookie. A lot of room to grow, and he's been phenomenal as a rookie. Now, as for the Jets offense, the Vikings D is nowhere near elite. Outside of their linebackers, they really don't have a great pass rush. Now, their linebackers are good at pass. You know, their leading linebacker, I think it was Za'Darius Smith, I want to say. Yeah, he has 9.5 sacks in the year. That's no joke. I mean, that's great. And then their other linebacker, Daniel Hunter, has 7 on the year. So, you know, those are basically the threats in the pass rush. So you got to look out for that. We got to pick up those blitzes, especially for the running backs to pick up. Beyond that, not a lot of pass rush. The next closest guy has 3.5. Then 3, 2, 1.5, 1.5, and 1. And then nobody else has a sack. So it's not a team of sack artists. So I think the Jets will be okay in that department, and Mike White will likely have time. You know, the Cowboys dropped 40 on this Vikings defense. The Patriots just dropped 26 on them. The Lions nearly beat them back in September, lost only by one score. So this is a defense you can exploit. I think if your offense is coached well, and I think we are, I anticipate we'll have another great day statistically for somebody like Mike White. I think with Max Mitchell back in the lineup on the O-line, we're just going to have time. I think he'll have time, and that's going to be big. Mike White doesn't even need a lot of time. He had the fastest release time last week out of any quarterback in the NFL. So getting rid of the ball extremely quickly. So that'll help regardless, but he'll even have more time than he needs probably in this one. And he'll just keep gelling with these wide receivers. I think he's already shown he's going to gel with these guys. They already have shown that they have the timing down. I think guys like Wilson and Moore are going to get open. Having Corey Davis back in the lineup just adds another threat, a guy that can get open, a big body. And then Berrios was getting involved last week too, and he looked great. So I think the Jets outmatch the Vikings when it comes to, you know, amount of weapons versus what they can cover and what they can handle. And I think Mike White, if he just plays another steady game, he doesn't have to even play as good as last week. Just steady, you know, get the ball to your guys, let them make plays. Don't make too many mistakes. You know, obviously nobody wants that, but he's shown, you know, poise in that department. I think we'll be just fine. So I initially predicted a loss in this game on Twitter last week because I projected out the rest of the season and I did put my win-loss total and who I thought we were going to win and lose against. However, I've changed my mind. After seeing the way Mike White played last week, He outplayed my expectations for him. So I'm giving the Jets this one, 28-24. I think they'll hit the over, which is like 45 and a half. So I think the Jets will ultimately play a better game than the Vikings, but 28-24 is a down of the wire game. I believe that was the same score that the Vikings had against the Lions. I could double check that, but I won't right now, but I think that's what it was. So I think the Jets could absolutely do that. Would not be shocked if the Jets put up over 30 on them. So, as long as we just play like we did last week, I think we'll score 28 to 31 points somewhere in that range. And I think the Jets D will hold up enough. So I gave the Vikings 24 in this one. I could see us doing better than that, but at the same time, it's an elite offense. So we'll see what happens. I think if we, there's a few approaches you can take to covering a guy like Justin Jefferson, and Bill Belichick's way, I think, is interesting. Instead of having somebody like Sauce just shadow him, which is one way to do it, when you have a guy that elite in Jefferson, Belichick does an interesting approach. He has basically his top corner cover wide receiver two. So in this case, it'd be Adam Thielen. And then he has his cornerback two, which would be DJ Reed, and another corner or safety cover the top wide receiver on the opposing team, like a Jefferson. So they basically double the best guy and put their best corner on the number two receiver. Very interesting approach. It has worked for Belichick for a long time. Would not be shocked if the Jets deployed something like that. I don't know. We'll see. That's how I would think about it. You got to take away someone like Jefferson. And you got to do all you can. So we'll see how they approach it. I think Jefferson will get going, and then it's like, how are we going to handle our halftime adjustments? But ultimately what I'm saying here is, guys, I think the Jets can win this game. My final record prediction for the Jets this year on Twitter was 10-7, which for me was getting the wild card. It's still going to be hard at 10-7 to get the wild card because teams like the Patriots and the Bengals are and the Chargers are all going to be competing for that last wild card spot. Because the AFC East is so good and the Dolphins right now have the AFC East title right now locked up unless the Bills take it back from them. The Bills, basically there's going to be probably two to three teams that in the AFC East that make the playoffs. The Dolphins are probably going to be one. The Bills are two, and they might flip. Like I said, who gets the wild card, who gets the division. That last spot's going to basically between the Jets, the Patriots, the Bengals, and the Chargers. The Jets right now have the spot. The Patriots and the Chargers are right on their heels, one game away. The Bengals are right there with the Jets as well in that wild card spot. So, you're rooting as you go into this week, root for the Pats to lose, root for, the Chargers to lose. These are the teams we want to lose. We don't want them competing for that last spot with us. I truly think it's going to come down to the Patriots and the Jets for that last spot, which is just poetic. But I think the Jets will get it. I do. So whether we're 11-6, 10-7, if we beat the Vikings this week, I think we're going to get it. If we don't beat the Vikings, I have a loss to the Bills. But then I have three straight wins for the Lions, Jaguars, Seahawks games, which will not be easy wins, by the way. Those teams are playing much better football this year. And then the Dolphins, I have a loss at the end. Again, if the Dolphins lock up the division, you never know. They might sit somebody like Tua for the final game. But we'll see. It's just such a competitive division. So I don't anticipate this being over anytime soon. I think it's going to come down to the very last week. And we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. But I'm excited. I feel like the Jets have a legitimate shot this year to get to the playoffs, to break that playoff drought that we've had, just to play meaningful football in December. And lastly, I'll say there was a really cool prediction that my brother Ryan, who used to be on the show as a host with me, tweeted back in January. And this is all, I'll finish the episode. He said, "Laugh now, but Robert Saleh will have the Jets playing meaningful football in December next season. Huge offseason ahead for JD. Let's go New York Jets. #AllGas, no break." this is the reality we're in now. Meaningful football in December. We need to keep rolling. Jet up. All gas, no brake. Let's go Jets. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Jet Up. Remember to go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Twitter at JetUpPod. This episode was brought to you by Roster Up Media, where football meets data. Head to rosterupmedia.com for more great NFL content.